exciting. This is exciting. Okay, I'm all rubber-faced. Back at it. Hi, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome with yet another episode, a post-World Men's Curling episode. Kevin was there all week. We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. We want to thank all of you for listening. And we want to thank me for showing up. I just came off a 15-hour drive. I was out Warren's Way, but I thought it'd be, oh, I'll just drive out there, you know, from Edmonton.
Casually.
Yeah, it was 7-8 hours, maybe something like that, 15. anyway, back at it for another week, and what a week it was. Thanks very much, of course, to our World Curling Hall of Famers, Kevin Martin and Warren Hansen. We want to fully recognize all our sponsors and thank them very much. Sports Interaction brings you what is happening around the curling world. Nestle Boost, sponsor of Mailbag, Coyote Tractor, brings you Hot Rock Topics. And Goldline brings you In the House, which is our guest spot. And we have one today, a very good one. Also, Hearing Life, who sponsors What Are You Hearing? So here's what's on the show today. World Men's Curling Champion, Bruce Mowat. We got an email from Eleanor, who's got a very interesting question that the boys are going to tackle. What's happening around the curling world? Ottawa just did conclude with, looked like a fantastic event. We'll look at the final results. Coming up, the Princess Auto Players Championship is underway in Toronto. Kevin's down there. We're going to look in on that. Hot Rock Topics, we got an interesting message from Chris Marino about why different events have different amounts of curl mandated. And we're going to answer that question of why. I never thought it was any different from event to event, but I'm wrong. New segment, what are you hearing? What we're hearing is that a couple of teams are making a change, and we're going to bring you up to speed on that. We just keep getting better and better guests all the time, and today is no exception. This is very exciting. This spot is called In the House, brought to you by Goldline. Goldline Curling is proud to be the founding partner of United We Curl, a nonprofit focused on expanding diversity in curling. Learn more at unitedwecurl.com. And in the house, come on in, Bruce Mowat. Congratulations, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm pretty tired.
And you just came off the ice. You had to go right to the right to Toronto for the Grand Slam event. You know, I've got Scottish heritage. God, it was great watching it. The crowd was fantastic, of course. But there were a lot of people waving Scottish flags. That must have been cool for you.
Yeah, it was amazing. It wasn't just our friends and family, I think. I don't even know where they were getting the Scotland flags from, if they had brought their own or if our fans were handing them out to them, but a lot of people ended up waving them in the crowd. So it made it really special for us just because there was a lot of, obviously, Scottish heritage in Canada. So yeah, a lot of people were supporting us and it was really, really special for us.
Sum it up, Bruce. How did you do it? How did you pull it off?
I guess the experience helped us. We've been at a lot of championships and we lost a few games early and we knew not to let it affect us. So we kept our heads held high and kind of grinded through the playoffs, and we didn't expect to get the 1-2 going into the last day because I think we need Nicholas Sedin to lose both his games. And, you know, that happened, and managed to get the second ranked spot and a bye to the semi, which gave us a rest, which was nice.
Congratulations, Bruce. Wow. Thank you for taking the time. I can't imagine, you know, what you're going through right now with the events so close together and dealing with all the people like us that are bugging you to talk. But I want to walk you back because it was such a good game. The semifinal against Italy. And the thoughts when Joel didn't have any time left. He was maybe at, I don't know, 30 seconds or something when your rock comes to land. But he was just going to draw for two. And in the booth, we're going like, there's a split. But then he sees the split. Your thoughts at exactly that time when you see he's drawing for two, which is great. You have the hammer and the extra. But no, he's changing his mind.
I think it was Amos that noticed it. And when I was kind of sliding past after I'd kind of hit his stone into ours, I had this kind of sinking moment where I was like, oh no, here we go. I think we've just lost the semifinal of a world men's when we were in complete control just of the kind of the ninth end and the 10th end. It was not a nice feeling. Obviously, you expect them to make it, and he was centimeters away from making that shot, and it really didn't sit well, and it still doesn't sit well. I'm like, why did we give him that chance? So yeah, we're just very fortunate that it didn't come off.
The building was so electric because both your team and Retornas are super popular. Like, you guys have been to Canada so much lately and both have won so much, but you guys are battling it out And there was Canada, of course, on the other sheet. And people were worried about Canada. But your game was really exciting. And then to measure, for goodness sakes.
I know.
To measure, is it a bite or is it not, right?
Yeah.
Because the final, in my opinion, once you got to deuce and you guys played so good. You have won. You've won 5 Grand Slams. You've won 2 of the players, which is probably the toughest event to win in the world. But that world, you get to the world final, and you guys just played tremendous. Thoughts about your team?
I mean, what can I say? Like, the last kind of 5-6 years with the guys has been unbelievable. We started with a kind of dream of going to the Olympics and hoping to win it. And, you know, we were very close to making that accomplishment last year. And we had to bounce back off what was ultimately a disappointment, even though we were medaled at the Olympics. We came back this at the start of this year and had a very slow start. We had a few kind of injuries as well. So eventually got over the line and started to see some results come back. And the boys have just been absolutely amazing. Like, they've really stuck together. They've encouraged me. They've supported me. I wouldn't want to do it with anyone else anymore. It's just, they're so much fun to be around, and I've got so much confidence holding the brush for them. And every time I sit in the hack, I'm like, oh, well, I've got 2 of the best sweepers to make my shots for me. I don't need to throw it that close. I just let go and they do it.
Go ahead, Warren.
Well, congratulations again, Bruce. Huge accomplishment through, we were talking earlier about the fact that any one of those 6 teams, I think, that made the final playoffs could have ended up being the winner. It was that close between all of them.
Yeah.
One more time, there's been a lot of talk this last week about sweeping, carving, knifing, taking off pebble, whatever the case may be. How effective do you think sweeping is today when it comes to impacting the ability to make a shot or not make a shot? And what kind of shots is it the most effective?
Well, for us, I think it's the 12 kind of weight. So like backline to dead hack weight. I think we can either really hold it on the inside or we can make it move on the outside. And I think both of our sweepers have really improved this season on it. I don't think I realized how effective they were, or as much last season as I did this season. And especially at the Worlds, I thought like Hammy was really getting it going when he had to carve, you guys call it knife. When he was able to get that thing going, it went crazy. And we missed so many line calls because of it. We would over curl it. And, you know, it kind of became a bit of an art for me and Grant to have to try and call those lines. And I just think the sweeping has really improved this year. And obviously everyone's trying to get stronger and fitter. And it's really making our game more athletic. And the teams that are really putting in the effort in the gym are starting to see the benefits, because you see the Italians, like, they've got 2 absolute machines at their sweepers, and they've come way through the ranks this year. I think that proves it.
What sort of a surface do you feel the sweeping is the most effective on? A harder one, a softer one, something in between?
I think when it's championship stuff, it's definitely the best. So like maybe arenas, our best performances this year have always been in the Europeans and the men, and the World Men's. Really good ice when it's pretty fast and we've got more time to deal with the stone. I think that's where it is best, or when we're able to move it as much.
So probably a little softer surface. What about the amount of rotation on a stone? So you guys put a lot of rotation on a stone, probably just about the most of anyone in that men's set of things. What impact do you think that has? You have able to use the brushes better with more rotation or less rotation? What's your thought about that?
I think the more rotation that we're putting on for those kind of 12 weights is that if we do need to hold it straight, we can. And if we do need to curl it, because it's got that extra few rotations, like you saw with Nicholas's shot, that thing moved like crazy. It was going sideways by the end. So we're obviously not putting that much rotation on. We're not putting like 50 odd or whatever it is. But I think when we're able to start carving it, we really get the thing going. And maybe that's down to the rotation. I'm not 100% sure, but it's just a theory for now. But we're trying to see what it does. And I think the way that we throw it, we really like it. And we're probably going to stick with it.
So WCF has commissioned a new sweeping study. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think this is something that we really need to do and to find out exactly what's going on? And do you suspect there may be some rule changes as a result of this? What's your opinion on it?
Well, yeah, I think the more knowledge that we gain about it is probably the better. And it really then comes down to each team individually if they want to study it or not. Our game, I guess, is not only physical, but mental and strategic. So the students of the game are going to start to come through if there's a lot more education and knowledge about it. I think it would be interesting to see what their results are. I've not personally seen it, but yeah, I would be interested to read the outcomes.
It's kind of become common practice to retexture the stones with sandpaper partway through the competition. Do you like that idea? Do you think that's something that needs to be done, or should it be maybe discussed and maybe sometimes done, maybe not done other times? What's your thought about that?
Yeah, I think the last few championships we've been to, it's always been like halfway through the week that they've been done. I know the Europeans was, and definitely the men's was. I can't remember what day exactly, but for us, we like it when it is curling more because it means that we can take more ice, obviously. We're probably the team that takes the least amount of ice just because of the extra rotations that we put on. So yeah, I quite like that they sanding the rocks halfway through events, and it's been pretty good for us this year, or this season even, with the Europeans and the world title.
Do you find your sweeping is more effective with the rocks once they've been sandpapered?
I've not noticed if it's better after or before, but I know that, as I've said, at championship stuff, it seems to be where we're really able to either hold it or make it curl.
Kevin?
You know, I wanted to talk a little bit more about that shot of Nick's. That was crazy stuff to do on a...
The spinner.
But more than that, over time, certain great players tend to change the boundaries of sport. And it doesn't matter if it's curling or baseball, it doesn't matter. Nick has maybe started something here. Well, Rachel Holman probably did first, and then now you, and then now we're going to Nick, where he can really alter the pool ball effect. Roy, the rock's going to bounce depending on how much spin with either one turn or the other. Is this going to maybe change things a little bit? When you're talking about a thick double across the house, if you can learn to throw 5.5 seconds with 30 rotations or 40 rotations, the bounce off of the second rock is substantially different. But that's something somebody has to practice. Well, those crazy guys do. But is that going to maybe change things a bit? Because it makes shots possible that never used to be possible.
It has definitely opened people's eyes and potentially some doors to what people can make. I would be very surprised if a team was able to come out and throw 5.5 seconds with like 30 rotations. They would definitely have to do some wrist movements and strengthening for that. But it's unbelievable, that shot that he made. And a lot of people have said it's the best shot that they've seen ever. And I would be one of them. It was like so good. Like, it's hard to even describe the impact that that shot's going to have. Because I think a lot of teams are now going to go and practice those kind of shots just in case.
Right.
Obviously, it was like a game-saving kind of shot. So if you need to play something like that, it's good to have it in your locker.
But it might become commonplace.
Yeah.
It could well do, yeah. I know a lot of teams probably go and play those things in practice just for a bit of fun. And I'll give a wee shout out to a guy called Cameron Bryce, who made a shot like that in our Scottish Nationals. He had to play a split that was out almost on the 12-foot line. He threw a spinner and he made that shot. He made the split perfect. It was a great shot at the time, and I was like, well, that's got to be up there with one of the best shots I've seen. And then Nicholas came and like made that shot. So I was like, oh, well, Nicholas maybe wins. But yeah, Cameron, he obviously like practices it just for a bit of fun in practice. And yeah, that's what practice is about, like go and have fun, test the boundaries of what we're trying to do here. So I think it could become common practice, and especially after this season.
The amount of spin that you guys put on with the weight you can throw, it's so different than a person that puts 2.5 rotations. You know what I mean? The release is different. And now you've got, like, Nick's was 50-some rotations, some crazy amount like that. Mm-hmm. But even if it's 20 rotations, something doable, it's just manipulating something, the stone, kind of like the carving does. Nobody ever thought of that just a few years ago with sweeping. And now all of a sudden, wait a minute here, we're putting all this spin on the rock. Nobody ever did that. So it's kind of neat to, I guess, transform our game. For the kids, like that's what I always think about. How many kids right now, Bruce, around the world, sliding out, spinning that stupid rock and figuring out what happens with it?
I hope every single one of them is trying that. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to go home and practice that when I get home. Like, yeah. It was so good.
It probably doesn't pick, I'll tell you that. Spinning like a top down there.
You wouldn't notice if it did anyway.
I want to mention a couple of things, Bruce. I want to talk about your off season, but before we get to that, last rock in the first end. And I think this last week, it seemed to be more important than it ever was with regard to who ends up coming out the winner at the end of the day. What's your thought about this? Has this got to the point where it's really a concern as to how important that last rock in the first hand is?
Well, I think the way that it's decided right now is good. I like that you have to have that 9-minute practice and then compete for a hammer. I don't know what the actual percentages were at the men's, but I think it's roughly between 60 and 65% win chance if you start with hammer.
Yeah.
So I quite like the fact that it's there and people have to compete and have to play a precision shot.
I can't say words either.
To actually get the hammer. So it's like it's a team shot and it's very important. I quite like the fact that it's there and that obviously it's very important. If you get the jump, you get the 2-shot lead. And that's probably what won us the final, I think, making the shot for 2 in the second end. It kind of boosted our confidence. It quieted the crowd a wee bit. And I think Brad and his team probably started that final thinking that they need to either force or steal to get us on the back foot. And with the jump of 2, it really helped us to go and win that title, I think.
Yeah, without question. So this season is going to be over soon. You guys pretty much devote your lives completely to curling. What will you do between now and the start of the next season in preparation? You're going to be working in the gym. You got a chance to throw rocks over the summer. What's your preparation for next year?
We get home after the Champions Cup and all 4 of us are just going to take some downtime completely off the ice. We're not going to throw rocks for probably 2 months. The boys and I have full-time gym memberships, obviously. Basically, British Curling have staff that help us train. So me and Bobby, who live in Stirling, we're going to train in Stirling with our gym coach 3 times a week and 2 conditioning sessions a week. So basically, it's 5 days a week when we're not on holiday or taking some downtime. And Hammy and Grant that live in Glasgow, they're going to do 2 strength sessions in Glasgow and come up once a week to make sure that they're training with our gym coach. And that's pretty standard for what we're going to do every summer. It's our full-time jobs. It's not an employment contract, but we see it as that, I suppose. And that's our commitment to British Curling, is to continue working on strength and maintaining our fitness throughout the summer to make sure that when we come back on the ice, we're ready to go.
Maybe a wee bit of golf, Bruce.
I'll be playing some golf, yeah. Hopefully the summer is pretty sunny and we can get some good rounds, but it tends to be pretty wet and rainy and windy in Scotland, so I'm not very good at it.
We had a young girl give us a question today in our email. She's 13 years old. She lives in a sort of underserviced part of Ontario, down in northwestern Ontario, in a farming community, and she can't find anywhere to curl. We had a little chat about that. Everyone agrees you got to get the young people involved. And I thought maybe I'll ask you what Scotland does for junior curling and, how do they try and get kids started in curling, and what sort of programs do you guys have?
I guess I'll start with saying that it's a bit of a scary situation in Scotland right now with ice rinks. Like, energy bills have been climbing and a lot of our ice rinks are struggling. What is amazing to see is the members that we do have of the ice rinks and the volunteers that come and coach the kids. That's been amazing. Some of the ice rinks have just been unbelievable. Like, since COVID's kind of finished, we've seen a lot of people come back to the sport, and especially in the grassroots stuff. So we're really hoping that it can kind of continue, and obviously the Olympics and hopefully this World Championship title in Scotland can help encourage people to come back and try curling. But for the likes of this 13-year-old girl who's maybe not able to get to an ice rink all the time, try and watch as much curling as possible. That's what the boys and I did growing up. Like, we absolutely loved the sport and loved to watch all the games that we could on YouTube or Recast or wherever else you can find your curling games. It helped educate us on strategy and stuff. And not only that, it's such a big part of the game, so you might as well try and learn strategy, and then when you get chance to go on the ice, then that's when you learn the physical aspect of curling.
Kevin has always said it's a little easier throwing some takeout weight in the first end of the first game of a round robin. It's a little different than going down in the hack to have to make a throw to win the world championship. It separates the really good from the great. Bring us inside your head, Bruce, about how do you handle nerves what you've been in this situation so many times where you do have to, you know, you got to throw a pretty good shot, you know, to win an event. Walk us through that when you've made the decision on what the shot is going to be and now it's time to execute. What do you say to yourself?
To be honest, I'm not really sure. It's just kind of become second nature to me. I don't like to be like riled up or like motivated really before a game. I find that to be like almost the opposite of what I need. I need to like chill out and calm down and really focus. So I have like playlists or I go for a walk or have a coffee or something along those lines rather than like do a really good like team warm up and someone motivates us and whatever. And when it comes down to playing a shot, I literally just take a few more seconds in the hack and I try not rush it. I take a deep breath. I focus on what I need to do and how I need to throw it and if I need to give it to the sweepers or if I need to make it on my own or whatever. Those are the kind of key things. So really like play it back in your head before you're about to make the shot and really focus on how you're going to make it rather than panicking or rushing or those kind of things that can happen when you're a bit stressed.
I work with a guy on a podcast who sounds very similar to when he had to throw big rocks, particularly for the gold medal at the Olympics. Bruce Mao, thank you very much for coming on. Congratulations. What a huge deal, right? What can you say? How do you put it into words about winning the world championships to you and your players and to your country? Boy, go and enjoy this. And you probably can sleep standing up right now. Maybe you just have to lean against the wall.
Yeah. No, I think I'll be doing that for a while, but hopefully.
Thanks a lot, Bruce, for coming on. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
The new world champion in men's curling.
Thanks, Bruce. Good luck.
Thank you for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Listen to the Inside Curling Podcast ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. So there he goes, your reigning world champion. I really like this guy. I said, you got to be freaking nervous. He's like, no, I don't. How about his answer, Kev? He's like, I don't like to get too motivated. I don't think he meant it exactly that way, but he said, I think the sense was, I don't like to get too excited, you know?
Right, excited.
I'm not jumping up and down. I'm guessing Ben Hebert probably approaches it a little different, you know, running around, ripping his shirt open or something, you know? Let's do it, boys! What a cool customer, Kevin.
Yeah, very cool customer, and a really good leader because he doesn't get upset. He doesn't go crazy. He wants a little bit of time by himself for the game and get his mind right, and he doesn't miss very much. So, and he's young still. My God, so yeah. What's he going to win? It's he's impressive, but we've been saying it now for quite a while, and right. It's just a matter of time. He'll get an Olympic gold too, at some point here, and he'll keep winning stuff. Good on him. But they have such a good team.
Interesting point he makes about how he gets ready for a game. And young people listening, this is something you have to determine individually, what you have to do mentally to get yourself prepared to play in any sport. And that varies from person to person. And as Jim said, Ben Hebert probably does it a little differently than Bruce Mowat.
One thing, you know, when it comes to a lot of the young teams, they have to have this meeting before the game. Well, that would have killed me. Like I'm kind of like Bruce, where I needed to go be by myself. Like I would go for a walk or something. I would show up for the game, since nobody say a word to me.
Yep.
I'm going to stretch, and then I go out on the ice. Still, I don't want to hear a word. And I used to stand at the end of the rink, which Bruce does quite a lot too, and Brad Gushue definitely does. And I would just concentrate, just stay in the game. And so like I didn't talk to many people. I remember Mark Kennedy one time, I was going down the ice. And we had just given up a two or something. I was going to say something. I stood in front of him and Ben, and I looked and looked and looked, and nah, I got nothing to say. So I turned, and Mark yelled down the ice, said, nice talk, Skipper. All that meeting stuff for me was not it. It wouldn't work for me.
Yeah. No. You know, the question of what do you do when you actually get down in the hack and you got to release. You know, you hear it in golf, some of these guys go, I don't like, you have to get up and down there to win the Masters or whatever, right? And what do you think of when you're over the ball, right? And like a lot of high performance people, Bruce's answer was similar. And he goes, yeah, I don't know. What did you go through? Are you like, okay, don't grab the rock too hard. I don't know. Pray. What do you?
I think the key thing in all that is to make sure that all your thoughts in that process are positive, that you can never let a negative thought enter your mind in that in those few moments before you're going to throw a shot. And I think that's a challenge for people to get into a routine where that they're thinking through the shot and exactly, okay, I've got this. This is what I'm going to do. And to never doubt yourself. And those are things that people have to learn through repetition and through probably losing a few times as well as winning.
Right on. Mailbag, brought to you by Nestle Boost. Complete nutrition to fuel your day. Dear Inside Curling, my name is Ellie Roden, and I live in southwestern Ontario, farm country. I'm 13 years old, and I love curling. My dream is to be a professional curler and go to the Scotties, but I'm not sure what steps to take to get there. I live in a small community where I am the only female curler my age. I'm looking into youth summer curling camps, but wondering whether you have any suggestions for how to move forward. I enjoy listening to your podcast and especially enjoy how you and your guests are thinking of ways to promote youth curling. My little brother suggests offering free candies. Ellie, that is a great email. Thanks a lot. So we don't have candies, but we got free advice. Kev, what do you say to that?
Well, geez, thanks, Ellie, for the email. That's awesome. Well, I guess I can relate pretty well. I'm from a town of a couple hundred people in Lougheed, Alberta, and I did have one other person that curled from Lougheed. His name was Glenn Snethen. He was 1 year older than me, so we played together. But then to get a team, we had to go at least Viking, if not further, which was about half hour away. So we had to go 40 minutes, you know, a long ways to get a team. So I can relate to what you're going through. And when I got done high school, then I moved to Edmonton, which is a near city, which is about 2 hours away. And there I found other curlers and so on. So it's not easy. You know, you're going to have to find players and they might be, you know, an hour away or something. But then when you get done high school, you know, you want to look into where you're going to go to school, be it a college or a university, whatever it is. I went to college, and that's where Jules Ochar was. That's kind of why I went there, because they had the best curling coach. But for you, figure out how you're going to get three other players, or at least one other player, and play mixed doubles, and then carry on. But that's my suggestion, is get ready for, you know, go to school, and how you're going to approach that. Rob Kreps, who's in charge of the University of Alberta's varsity program, he gets a lot of phone calls from people from all over the world that are wanting to come to Edmonton, move to Edmonton, go to the University of Alberta and plan things that way. And there's lots of schools across Canada that compete in curling, so you want to get on one of them. As far as summer curling camps, like obviously we run one in Edmonton. You're a little young for it. It's kind of a boot camp, but when you're 14 or 15, you'll be ready for that one. The Kevin Martin Curling Academy. It's hard though. Reed Carruthers in Manitoba is a very good instructor. He runs camps. And I think Warren has maybe a little bit of information as far as Ontario camps. But it's important that you get to these camps, because that's where you're going to meet kids that are like-minded with you, that love curling and want to be good at it. So maybe that's where you're going to end up finding your teammates going forward.
Yeah, thanks for your email, Ellie. And congratulations on your desire to become a top-level curler. Like Kevin, I grew up in a rural area north of Edmonton, and probably went through the same struggle as he did trying to move forward with the sport. And again, it wasn't easy. And in those days, practicing was frowned upon. So to even get on a sheet of ice to throw some rocks, you usually had to become a good friend with the ice maker and try and convince him that, well, that game over there is over in sheet four. Let me out there for a half an hour. So you're going to have those struggles. I would suggest get in touch with the Ontario Curling Association, Curl Ontario. And there's a number of camps, by my memory, that do take place in the summertime in Ontario. Also, it'd be good for you to touch base with them and tell them what your interests are. And they can maybe give you some direction as well as to what's happening in your area and kind of get on their radar from that point of view. So those would be my suggestions on what you might want to look at. And good luck.
Would it be prudent for her to look at joining a boys team if they'd let her, Kev? Or?
Well, I don't know. Well, there's certainly no problem with that. The junior Bonspiel I ran for 17 years, it was open. The teams that came in were four boys, four girls, or 2-2, or 3-1. It didn't matter.
Right.
So there were small town teams that came in with whatever amount of girls and boys on the team. So no problem. No, there's no issue with playing with, you know, guys with girls or vice, it doesn't matter.
And this idea of men and women having to play separately, unless they're in mixed or mixed doubles, it's pretty much a Canadian thing. The rest of the world, curling is at the recreation level, it's pretty wide open. You can have three men and one woman, or three women and one man, or whatever combination that you want in most recreational leagues. So it's going to become more so that way in Canada, I think, as time progresses. It is in some areas now, but that's more or less a Canadian historic thing of having the men and women divided.
It doesn't matter. You're out there to have some fun, and curling's the same. Like, you're not playing for a national championship. You're there to have some fun, get some exercise, make friends. That's what it's all about. So it shouldn't matter at all, Jimmy. That was a great point. Yeah, just get a team together. And I know it's not easy from a small town, because that's where I came from.
Yeah. You know, we do talk a lot about it, right? About the youth. So, and we always think, well, you know, what's the difficulty in growing the game? And then you get this email, right, from this young girl saying, there's nothing going on here where I live. So great email, Ellie, and good luck to you. Get back to us, Ellie. We want to hear how you're managing. Okay, here's another email with some questions about brushing and how it might impact sweeping percentages. I think it would be interesting to hear a discussion of how the shooting percentages have changed since the advent of directional sweeping. Regards, Patrick, SPG Gillis. Not sure what that means, Patrick. If you're gonna give us initials, I need to know the full thing. Kev, what do you think about that?
Well, it's funny. What a great timing for this email. So yesterday, I'm actually in Buffalo now. I got my Buffalo Bulls shirt on, cheering on the.
There you go.
Michaela, our youngest. They have a doubleheader today, so we took off. But yesterday, I was in Toronto, and I'll be there tomorrow again for the players. Where I had a interview with Brad Jacobs and Reed Crothers yesterday. I had a great discussion with them after the interview, actually, as well, about this carving. And Reed said on the top teams now, with board weight, you probably have a foot of discrepancy as far as being close to the broom and making the shot. You can be 4, 5, 6 inches wide. Doesn't matter. They can carve it to the nose. If you're a little tight, they can keep it dead straight all the way down the sheet. So, yes, carving and sweeping is a huge influence on the percentages. Now, last week in Ottawa and 2 weeks ago in Sweden, I had meetings with the World Curling Federation, various people. It's a concern how throwing, the technical side of throwing, used to be so important. Now it's more about the sweeping. So what do we do? And that's, there's going to be a big sweeping summit this summer. Top sweepers, they're going to make ice, all kinds of conditions. Like the ones in Ottawa that were humid and the ice surface a little softer, like at the Brier this year where it was colder, it's a little bit straighter ice and a very firm surface where carving didn't really help much. And so they're going to do all these studies and try to figure out what do we do. I know that Brad Jacobs yesterday said, why are we allowing carving between the hog lines? Just make it so the sweeper on the high side can't be closest to the rock until the second hog line. Mm-hmm. Just make that. So there's lots of discussion going on as to what to do, but what a great email. Thank you. And your timing is so perfect because right now it is the talk of curling right now is what do we do about this? Because conditions like Ottawa, carving was far too effective. In my opinion, I think it was too effective.
Too effective?
Too effective.
What?
You're controlling the game but with sweeping.
It's not a technical game anymore, throwing, and we needed to get back to that. Reed Crowther said yesterday that 30% of the game is now technical throwing and 70% is sweeping and manipulation, where he'd love to see it 70% technical throwing, 30% sweeping and manipulation.
Give the sweepers their due. Come on.
Oh, they're getting good.
Well, we'll change the name of the game, Jim, from curling to sweeping.
No, that wouldn't believe. Yeah, no, I'm not signing up, believe me. Yeah. What's happening around the curling world is brought to you by Sports Interaction. You want to bet? You can do it at Sports Interaction. Get in on the action and make a play at Sports Interaction. You got to be 19 years or older to play and in Ontario only. So the World Men's Curling Championship concluded a couple days ago. Bruce Mowat, Scotland, took the gold. Canada silver and Switzerland won the bronze. Kev, give us your wrap-up of the whole 10 days.
Well, it was a fantastic 10 days, to be honest. Ottawa did a heck of a job. Dave Merklinger, the ice maker, that was his last event. So thank you, Dave, for all you've done for our sport.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. The first event he did was in, I believe, 1990, I think he told me, in that same building.
Yes. Scotty's.
And did a heck of a job. So great on Dave.
Nice run.
The event, fantastic. Really good crowds the first weekend, really good crowds the second weekend. So all of that was really good. The curling in the playoffs, you just had terrific competition with Nicodine taking on Brad Gushue, of course. That was a massive game, and mm-hmm. Gushue got a monkey off his back there by winning that one. Canada and semi didn't have a lot of trouble. It was tied up playing nine, but didn't have a lot of trouble with Switzerland, in my opinion. But Italy had a split to win against Scotland and hit it perfect. It just, we ticked another rock and redirected. They measured for the win, but it wasn't in. If he hits it just slightly, I talked to Sebastiano on the stairs yesterday, and I congratulated him on a tremendous Worlds. Mm-hmm. And he thought if he hit it a little thicker, it would have caught the second rock a little more and actually put turn on the stone, and then it would have spun in. And then I'm thinking a hair thinner, it doesn't tick the second rock, and he wins. So a hair thinner or a hair thicker.
Oh, man.
They win and go to the final. But instead, they end up going into the semi and or into the bronze game, and they lose to Switzerland. So, and in Scotland, you know, a bit of good fortune not having that bite. And they go on and just play an amazing final against Canada. And congratulations to Bruce and company. My goodness, at their age, watch out. You know, they've won, what, they've won five Grand Slams now, and now they got a world championship. Mm-hmm. Yikes. They're going to win a lot of stuff.
Well, Bruce Mount, we've been talking about for a long time now. So well done. I can't. A little tick like that.
Such a good shot. And he only had about 12 seconds left on the clock or something. Joel had no time to come down from the hack and have a look at the split. He just believed Amos and said, no, we'll play the split, hit it perfect, but a hair thinner, a hair thicker, he wins the game. Really good. Really exciting stuff.
That's like having a putt to go into the final of the world match play and it hits the cup but bounces back out.
Oh, man.
Well, good for them, though. Good event. Warren, you watched it all week.
Yes, I did, Jim, and it was, again, pretty exciting curling. I think a few things I observed. We have parity, I think, at that world men's level and the women's like never before. I think any one of those final six teams could have won under certain circumstances. Mm-hmm. I think, again, it's emphasized to us how important the last rock is in that first end. It's becoming more and more important. Seldom does the team with hammer in the first end lose. Again, you get down that last end, same thing. And an interesting observation where I saw on more than one occasion a team preferring to be down two with the hammer going into the last end versus tied without. That's quite a stretch. So it's something to look at. Again, when everything becomes too predictable, that's been the problem curling's been facing now for many years. Then you haven't got the situation you want to have the game you want. So it's something that needs to be watched. The event is too long, as is the briar, which we've talked about many times. I think that's something the WCF and Curling Canada has to address going forward with both mm-hmm. those events. They've got to be cut down in time because it's a grueling grind on the players. It's difficult to have fans attend the entire event. It's just simply too long. Whether they go to a different playoff system, and maybe that is the answer, I'm not sure. And, of course, the other thing is those players are there for that virtually 10-day grind. And at the end of the day, there's no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And I think that's something else that's got to be looked at, that there should be some kind of financial reward for the teams that get into the medal round. From Canada's point of view, we see a lot of grumbling on social media, but I think Canada should be pretty proud of their performance in both the men's and women's worlds. They came up with two medals. Mm-hmm. The only other country that did that was Switzerland. And in the crowd that they're keeping today, to come out with a silver and a bronze, I think is pretty good from Canada's point of view, and people should be pretty pleased from that end of it. Brad Gushue was the number one skip of the week. He curled 87.6% as an average. He was right on his numbers. The total attendance was 75,000, which was probably pretty good. This is the problem with the World Championships in Canada. When Canada's on the ice, the building is pretty full, and when they're not, it's often empty. So mm-hmm. it's hard to get a big number, but interesting to note, the largest attendance ever for the men's worlds was in Edmonton back in 2007, and it was 170,000.
That's a big number, 170,000. I was just going to say, you mentioned the wear and tear on the curlers. So yesterday I ran into Gaute Nepstad, who's the lead on Norway's team. And of course, Bendik Ramsfell had a problem with his wrists. Remember, they were taped up during the Worlds and he couldn't sweep. So I just said, hey, you guys, ready to go here? Gaute, I'm dead tired. He said, yeah. I'm dead. Like, because Bendik couldn't sweep. So Gaute did most of the sweeping along with Martin Susaka as well. But Gaute did the most, and then he said, pooped. So here you are at the Players' Championship. And, you know, he swept for 12 straight days or 11 straight days, whatever the worlds are. And you're just, you know, you're running on fumes.
How stiff is a guy after he curls like that? You know, at the end of a day of a couple of games or something. Are you doing the hot tub, Kev? What hot tub, the cold bath? What do you do after? The massage?
You need some rest.
Yeah. Hot water, rest.
Bourbon.
Jim, you should have been around for the days of the corn brooms and 12-hand games.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. No, I shouldn't have been. Congratulations to Ottawa and to all the competitors. And as you pointed out, Kev, to Canada, way to go. Came away with some medals. That's always good. What should we do now? Oh, I got an idea. Let's go to our picks and let's see how we did. Take your time, Hanson. Everyone needs
to
hear
Kevin,
this.
Well, Kevin, you're going to have a hard time to believe this, but Jim actually did pick the winner. He picked Scotland. Didn't do too well with 2 and 3 because neither one of them made Sweden or Norway the final four.
Doesn't matter.
But Scotland did win, so congratulations, Jim, on picking the winner.
Thank you, Warren.
Kevin got two of the teams in the final correct, Canada, Scotland, but in the wrong order. Italy was his pick for bronze, and they didn't make it. Warren picked all three, but in the wrong order, having picked Switzerland, Scotland, and Canada in that order. Just reverse them a bit, and bingo would have been there. But Jim, you're the man.
You're the man,
Jim. Thank you very much, Warren. It must kill you to say that, Hanson. It must kill you to say that. If I do nothing else all year. Kevin, no rest for you. The fifth Grand Slam of the season is underway. The Princess Auto Players Championship is in Toronto. You're going to be starting your broadcast on Thursday. Give us your little summary, Kev, of how it's shaping up and who might be the winners of the big bonus deal of the year, which is the Pinty's Cup.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Pinty's Cup first here. So on the women's side, Kari Anderson's, of course, had just a tremendous year. So they're leading actually with 39 points right now. So that's a fairly big lead. Holman is at 31. And then you go down to Gim and Fujisawa. Gim at 26, Fuji at 22. Okay, so that's kind of where that stands. Keep in mind that the winner gets 25 points, though. And then second place, 19, and then 15. So Nikodine, he's at the top at 35. Guju at 31, and then Retornaz and Botcher are at 24 each. So the men's is still pretty wide open. Dunstone 23, Mao it's actually at 20. So, because with 25 for the winner, everybody's still sort of in it on the men's side. Women's, though, it's kind of a two-horse race between Anderson and Holman for the Pinty's Cup. The event, I watched the ice yesterday, and it looks great, of course. Mark Shirk, ice maker, doing what he does best. He's done every slam pretty much since it started 20-some years ago. So to me, the event, the Players' Championship is huge. I did a bunch of interviews with a lot of the players prior to the event, which we do before the big Grand Slam events. And somebody said, well, this is the biggest event of the year, so this is what matters to us. It's viewed very highly as for a pecking order of who's who, because this is the best of the best. There's only 12 teams, two pools of six. To get here, you have to be in the top 12 in the world, period.
Oh.
So to win this event is really tough. The World Championships that Bruce just won is really tough when you get to the playoffs, but the whole field isn't equal. You can kind of pick the top six or, you know, out of maybe top seven. Here, good luck.
Yeah, it's tough, and it's kind of two events in one, too, Kevin. So they're playing for the Princess Auto Players Championship. They're playing for that prize pool, but then, as you mentioned, the Pinty's Cup with 75,000 being the top and 40 the second. So there's lots of dollars in the line here for the players at this event.
Did you ever think, Warren, there'd be a day where you might be able to curl and win 75 thou?
Well, Jim, in my day, 75 thou was like 750,000 is now. So.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
We were playing for snowmobiles and cars and things like that.
Oh, is that? Yeah, of course. Yeah, back in the day, right. When did the cash come along? The cash spiels, Warren, when did they start? When someone got four snowmobiles, they said, this is enough.
One occasion that we won 8 snowmobiles in a month, 2 different events.
That's funny.
I was being funny. I didn't know that.
But actually, the first big cash spiel, this is a good question, because we won it, and it was back in 1972 in Prince George, and first money was $3,000. And that was probably three times more than anything had been played for in a regular cash spiel up until then. So right. That was a big deal, $3,000.
Big one. Kevin, is there a big oilman's thing here? What's the biggest bond spiel?
With the amount of teams, you mean now?
Yeah.
That's not really as big a thing as it used to be.
Is that right?
Warren, okay. I don't know. You might know of some with tons and tons of teams nowadays, but we used to have the Northern Alberta bond spiel. NACA put it on, and there was the MCA and spiel, and then they would have hundreds of teams. But that's kind of not the way it is anymore.
No, it's kind of dwindled, hasn't it? I mean, those events were a week long. I can remember that right. City of Edmonton bond spiel. It wasn't as big as Manitoba, but it was probably a couple hundred teams.
Yikes.
Playing in about 10, 12 events. And so, and it was every curling club in the city was part of it. The biggest challenge was you finished playing in one curling club and to figure out where the next one is you had to go to and how far away it was.
Yeah. I'm sure back in that day, Kev, I think you said the guy might have had a beverage or two between draws.
Well, and it was a week long, and talking about snowmobiles. So I was curling with Brad Hanna, a really good guy and a good curler from Edmonton here. And we won golf clubs, Ping Eye 2s back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah, I still hit them sometimes.
Do they have the copperheads? You are getting old if you have those.
Yeah, I didn't have the copperheads, no. But the Ping Eye 2s, and people give me a hard time. I take them out and hit it with them because they're great clubs. And I don't know what year that would have been. I have no idea. Early 90s, I think. But there's 120-some teams in it. And like the snowmobiles, it was golf clubs.
I wish I hung out with you, Warren, back in the day. That would have been fun. I could have helped your team.
Jim, you were too young. You would have been the mascot.
I was too young. Okay, here's the deal. Eight women's teams and eight men's make the playoffs in this event. We're not going to put you through us picking eight teams each. We're teaming up to do our picks. I'll pick three. Warren's going to pick three. Kevin will pick two. I'm going to go with the front runners. Okay, and the women, I'm going to go with Anderson, Holman, and Fujisawa.
I will go with Gim, Laws, and Hasselberg.
Dun, 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 dun.
I will go with Grandy and Vrano.
It'd be freshies. Have they won yet?
You're right. They're fresh, but this is interesting. None of us picked Terrence Oney for probably good reason. They're
pooped.
They're burnt out.
They're pooped out.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't pick Jonesy, Terrence Oney. Scheidegger's team, it's not Scheidegger this week.
No, but I think you're right. I think that the fresh ones are going to have the best shot in this event.
I had a really tough time not picking Tabitha, though. Like, they're curling really good, but it's just a really tough field. And you'd like,
right.
I didn't pick, well, how do you not pick Terrence Oney, Jones, or Peterson? And Tabitha won her first game.
The fresher ones are going to have the best shot at this one.
Right. And Jonesy made our new segment, Hearing Life. Her name is in there, so stick around, and we'll tell you all about that. Okay, men. Botcher, Dunstone, and Brucey Baby, Bruce Mowat.
Mowat, really?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I did okay with him last week. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm going to pick a team I think that's going to do really well, and that's White and Aden. And probably can't overlook Cooey. That was my three.
All right. Okay. Kev, two for you.
Just to let you know, Jimmy, Bruce Mowat's at 0-2. He just lost to Carruthers just now. So
did I say Mowat?
But that's okay.
I meant.
Yeah.
No, he can still get in. He has got to win his last three. So I've got to pick Retornaz. Oh, geez, wait a second here. With you picking Mowat, I've got the Goo, which I got to pick Brad.
Just for the
Retornaz,
name.
But then there's Carruthers with Brad Jacobs, for goodness sakes, and I can only take two. How do I leave one of Gushu,
well, that's too bad.
Or yeah. Carruthers out? All three are going to make the playoffs. So I just pick, I don't know. I'm going to make somebody mad. No. Brad's still curling really good, so I got to take. And Retornaz, they're curling great. They beat Mao at the first game.
This is really difficult.
Sorry, Carruthers. Reed and Brad, how do you not pick them? But I can't pick three, so that's it. I'm picking Guju and Retornaz. And we're leaving out Brad Jacobs with Carruthers, for goodness sakes.
The other one that could probably do quite well is Dropkin as well. We have to leave out that.
Sure.
And Ramsfell.
Well,
we could do this all day, boys, okay? You just pick eight, okay?
We've got our eight, so this will be interesting to see Friday.
Okay, there we go. Hot Rock Topics is brought to you by Coyote Tractor. If you have work to do, Coyote has the tractors, UTVs, and ZTRs to do it. Coyote, we dig dirt. So Chris asked the question of why it seems that the WCF desires the rocks to have 4 feet of curl, Curling Canada wants 5 feet of curl, and the Slams want 6 feet of curl. This is a great question. Why do these differences exist, or is it really the direction given, and how can it be controlled? And what if at a WC event, all of a sudden, it's curling 6 feet? Good question, Chris. Kev?
Well, that's the trick of the ice maker, isn't it? That's why we have these terrific ice makers. But remember at the Grand Slams, there are only 8 end games and not nearly as long of an event. Mm-hmm. Doesn't go for as many days. The rocks don't erode or the scratchiness wear off of them. Mark Shirk likes to get a good, like, 5.5-6 feet of curl. Near the edge of 12 to draw the button. It's fantastic. And the keener, the better. I always liked the more curl and the keener, the better chance we'd have to win. That was the way we always looked at it. And in the Worlds, why they don't only want 4 feet, I don't know that. They actually had a little bit more than that at the Worlds. They're into the 12-foot a bit to draw a button. But still really good ice. And why 4 feet? I don't know the answer to that. But it's easier to keep 4 feet of curl because with a long event like that where they're running for so many days and they do sand, have to sand in the middle of the event.
Right.
So you do get a little more aggressive ice right after sanding the stones, of course. Mm-hmm. But they try to keep it at 4 feet. And I think because of the length of the event, probably. Otherwise, if they wanted 6 feet of curl at the Worlds, they'd have to sand the rocks every 3 days, or every 2 days.
And I think the Worlds as well, their philosophy has always been that most of the countries in the world are playing with stones that are probably duller than sharper. So they're used to having conditions that are fairly straight. So they don't want to produce a scenario where they're coming into a world as all of a sudden there's this 6 feet of curl that they're completely not familiar with. So I think that has been their thought process on it. It's very much controlled by the ice makers by how they apply the sandpaper to a very large degree as to how many pulls they do and to what grit they use. And also the ice surface can have a great impact on it as well. So these very good ice makers can in fact control it. I think it's interesting, Kevin. I was talking to Merklinger yesterday and I said, I was thinking there quite often there was probably closer to 6 feet of curl at the world level. What's going on there? How'd you get away with that? And he just laughed. So I guess when you're doing your last event, you don't care, right? But it was a little more curl than normally you'd see at a WCF event, certainly more than there was in Sweden.
If you had to pick, Kevin, would you rather have 4 feet of curl or 6 feet?
Six. Six, yeah. And keen. Keener. As keen as possible and as much movement, the better teams will end up winning on that.
The more curl, Jim, the greater the skill of the player will be tested.
Right. When you say keen, what do you mean?
Fast.
Fast. Okay. Faster, the better. Yeah.
It's like me, keen and fast.
Just like your forehead.
Oh, I'm getting digs from Hanson. Okay. Okay. Listen, old man, if you want us to repeat all the topics, okay, we can go over it again. Very good. Thanks a lot to Chris. Okay, our new segment, What Are You Hearing? Brought to you by Hearing Life. If vision places the world in front of us, hearing places us at its center. Hearing Life invites you to love your ears with a free hearing test. No referral needed. Visit hearinglife.ca to book your free hearing test today. We're hearing something about the Jonesy team. They got a player who's not going to continue with that team next year. Kev, what do you know about all this?
Well, actually, I don't know much. I tried to find out this morning, but the team, they were on the ice this morning, so I tried to reach out to them. But you know what? I think more of a general statement with young players. Mackenzie Zacharias, it sounds like, is deciding on her future, which is really important at that age. Like, Mackenzie's what, Warren, 23, I think? 23. So not a very young person. And that happens in life where she's a fantastic curler, as good as you get at that age. But she's really smart too and needs to decide, okay, what path am I going to go in this life? You know, mm-hmm. Not everybody chooses one or the other. And that's something that, you know, the sport has to deal with. All sports have to deal with, and curling is one of them, where these young athletes are curlers for the most part are really quite intelligent because it's curling is a chess game basically on ice. So they're intelligent people and they have great opportunities. So, you know, whatever Mackenzie chooses is 100%. And, you know, we just wish her the best of luck with whatever direction she decides to go.
Warren, what's going to happen with the best mixed doubles teams? some announcement came out this week.
Yes, I think one of the best mixed doubles teams for the last 5 or 6 years has been the combination of Nancy Martin and Tyrell Griffiths, and they announced also a couple of days ago that they will not be continuing as a unit. I kind of suspect I see that Nancy has been announcing a women's team over the last couple of weeks that she was putting together, so maybe she's going to put more of her emphasis on that than mixed doubles. But again, they have been very successful. They haven't won the Canadian Championship, but I think they lost two finals. So that's another team that's not going to be together come next year.
Okay, there we go, boys. Another show in the books. Boy, if you're in Toronto, Maple Leaf Gardens is where that's being held. The old Maple Leaf Gardens, of course. Make your way over there. Someone told me that the refurbish on that place, Kev, has made it like super cool, that whole building.
Well, yeah, they moved the floor up like a long ways. So now it holds about, I'm going to say 5,000 people. It's a really nice size arena. And we get really good crowds at the Players. Underneath is the Loblaws.
Oh.
Like where the floor used to be. So the cement floor in the Loblaws, the center ice button.
Yeah.
Is on the floor. Like where it used to be is on the floor in the Loblaws. It's a very, very cool. Yeah. Pop on down and see everybody for sure.
And if you can't get there, it's going to be on all week. Sportsnet brings you wall to wall coverage starting Thursday morning. So check it out. And Kev, you get back to doing what you're doing. Warren, I'm sorry I missed you on my trip when I was west. Actually, I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry, actually.
I was recovering from COVID, Jim. So
You wouldn't want to come and visit me. Yeah, you poor soul. Well, I'm glad you're better. You're here to talk about it. We want to thank Rod Paulson and his company, In-House Strategies, who does all the great work on Facebook. Our Facebook group is growing all the time. And check it out. Warren weighs in on a lot of stuff there, and we'd love to read it. Send us an email if you'd like, insidecurling@gmail.com. And thank you to all our sponsors, Sports Interaction, Coyote, Boost, Hearing Life, and Goldline, who make all of this possible. Kevin, take it easy, brother. We'll be watching you this week. Make us proud, would you? Make us proud. Warren, are you proud of me?
I'm always proud of you, Jim.
Thank you, Warren. That's good. Don't say anything more. Just stop right there. Okay. Talk to you next week. We're going to do an update show, though, before we do that on Saturday morning, right?
It'll be out Saturday morning.
Yep. Right on. Talk to you later, boys. Take it easy. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.